So I'm here today in this episode talking to Ron Myers. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Adrian.
So I last saw you at the Cosmetic Awards a couple of weeks ago. That was quite a do, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. There was a surprising number of people there, actually. I think probably close to 250. The room is packed out.
Yeah, and it was quite a sort of glamorous event, wasn't it?
It was, actually, yeah. It was a James Bond theme. It was interesting to see the Jaws lookalike there and Daniel Craig.
Yeah. So I just would say that if anyone is at any events, and Ron and I are often there, so please come up and say hello. It's always nice to get feedback. And a couple of people did come up and said they listened to the podcast, which was absolutely great. I thought I'd talk today a little bit, Ron, maybe about PIP breast implants, just a little bit, and also then about hair removal. So this morning, I've woken up to stuff on the news about PIP implants. We've known there's been a problem with these implants for a long time. But today it's all sort of gone off. It's all over the papers, all over the press. Our office has been had hundreds of calls from previous patients who've had breast implants. You know, could you just tell us what the problem is and, how this might relate to people in the cosmetics industry?
Well, the problem was with the French manufacturer of these implants. Apparently, it was using non-medical grade silicone. Apparently, believed to be made for mattresses, according to BARPS, anyway. In conjunction with, I think, an inferior shell as well. And so, I think the issue has been that these have had a higher rupture rate, and also the concern is that the silicone could potentially leak out more than maybe other comparable. Sort of implants that are used today. The company that actually distributed them in the UK was a company called Cloverleaf. And the problem is this: the actual manufacturer has now gone into receivership. Cloverleaf actually is still operating, but obviously aren't promoting these implants anymore because they're not there. And there appears to be sort of mixed advice regarding whether these implants should be removed or not, depending on whether they're ruptured or not. And certainly at the moment, I think the MHRA appeared to be clear, and certainly today, if you look on the BBC News Health, the MHRA is saying that there should be, there's no evidence of possible links with cancer that would support removal of these implants. BARPS are also saying that really you should go to the clinic that can actually put these implants in for an assessment to check whether or not they are ruptured. And if they're not, I think at the moment the advice is still to keep them in.
Yeah. So luckily we've never used them. There's not a terrible problem with them. But, how does this relate, for anyone thinking of using a product in, aesthetic medicines or a new toxin or new filler?
Well, I think a lot of this relates to really trying to look at the source of supply, really, and the quality of the manufacturer, and the quality of the data, I think, as well, behind the particular device or injectable treatment that's being promoted. And what you tend to find as a rule of thumb in this marketplace is that the more expensive the device or product, it's the reason is because there tends to be more evidence behind it. So in other words, they've done more work to prove efficacy and safety, and possibly manufacturing standards may be higher as well. But costs are higher to the individual surgeon or clinic that's actually buying them. And I think in today's marketplace, there's a tendency to look at buying from cheaper sources, and there are plenty of those out there.
Yeah.
But I think there are undoubted dangers there, and this potentially is one. I think certainly with the PIP breast implants, they were put into the larger groups at a very low price.
Yeah.
And so I think the major companies, HarleyMed and Transform, I think have been the big users of these implants, and I'm not sure how they're actually going to deal with any issues that are going to arise from this.
It was very interesting. Who is liable? Is it the manufacturer? It's not the manufacturer. Well, they are, but they've gone bust, haven't they? Distributor or the company that all the individual surgeons.
Well, this is it. Each company as well tends to have different sort of guarantees that wrap around this. You'll sometimes have a guarantee that's issued by an implant manufacturer that will guarantee the implants for say 10 years. or maybe even longer. So in the event of them rupturing, then you don't have to pay for the cost of the implants, but I think obviously there's still potentially the cost of the surgery to remove and replace them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other side of things is some people take out some form of extra insurance over a period of, say, 4 to 5 years to kind of cover that event of a rupture that'll incorporate in the fees of surgery as well. So in other words, if there is a problem, then you don't have to pay for the surgery. But if you look on the internet, if you're outside of that, certainly I was just looking at Transform here with the particular case that's been reported I've seen on a blog site where they're basically charging £5,000 for replacement of a ruptured implant.
Yeah.
Which is more than actually the cost, usually, of having the implants put in the first place.
Absolutely. So they put the... Yeah. I mean, you can understand how the patients are a bit frustrated.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks. Well... Thanks for the update on that, Ron. So I thought the next thing I'd like to talk about in this pre-Christmas edition is hair removal. Now, at that meeting the other day, I was talking to a couple of people, yourself included, who said that in a lot of aesthetic clinics, you know, the bread and butter work is laser hair removal. And that's not something we offer. Could you just tell me, you know, do you think people should do it? If so, how do you make it work?
Okay, well, I mean, if you look at it from a point of view of the market, it's always good if you're looking at, I mean, the problem is when we look at all of these different marketplaces, they all have different dynamics, so different potential market sizes, different costs involved in getting into that marketplace, because obviously there's, you know, obviously you'll understand that from the breast implant side of things, looking at the costs involved, you're going to have to be CQC registered, you've got to have an appropriate operating theatre, you've then got to buy in the implants, you've got the marketing wrapped around that, and you've only got a certain number of women that are going to have breast implants every year, so there's a defined market size. And that's a lot smaller than the laser hair removal market.
Yes.
In the UK, unfortunately, there aren't any real figures that you can hang your hat on. I've seen a few presentations at meetings that have looked at the US, where they claim that the in-office or clinic-based laser hair removal procedures are worth £10 billion, with more than 1.5 million procedures performed every year, and that 86% of women seek some form of laser hair removal treatment. And it is undoubtedly over there the number one cosmetic procedure between the
ages. Really? And would most clinics have it? And would most plastic surgeons or clinics offer it?
Not necessarily, because, again, it depends on sort of where you're coming from. The problem is that obviously most plastic or cosmetic surgeons do not want to actually perform laser hair removal procedures.
No.
So it looks at their, you've got to look at their actual setup. Now, I think in the UK, when you've got a lot of plastic surgeons who, private plastic surgeons, who maybe also are involved in the NHS, who hire out consulting rooms and then hire out facilities, such as a Bupa or Nuffield or whatever hospital, they don't physically have a place that they can put one of these machines in. So I think you've got to have a physical business premises and also a suitable person to operate it, because as a plastic surgeon,
no,
with the types of pricing that you've got there as well, you're just not going to earn the money to do it. So, you know, most people will put in either a nurse or a suitably trained therapist to actually operate the procedure.
Yeah. So any of our listeners out there who've got a premises, let's say someone's got, you know, a clinic with a spare room that they're using the room, you know, 20% of the time they've got a spare room. They don't particularly want to do the hair removal because it's a bit boring. And they wanted to set someone else up there or do a little bit themselves. How would they go about doing that, Ron?
Well, I mean, I think what they've got to do is to look at, like any business, and this is almost like, you know, it's a separate business within a business. So if you look at laser hair removal, you've got to look at the market, the opportunity, your competition. So if where you are and you're surrounded by, say, for instance, you've got a skin next door and a courthouse clinics and a Renew Medical and a Laser Raise, these are all companies that have been involved in laser hair removal for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might find it difficult to compete against them. So that's the one thing. The other side of things you've got to look at is the population that you have as well. So are they predominantly Caucasian, or are they dark skin types? Because that will relate to the type of equipment and machinery that you need to buy as well. So that's really important.
Yeah.
It's good to look at pricing in the area as well. So look at the average prices, although in general prices have, for pretty much most cosmetic treatments, come down. But for me, you want to, any clinic that was going to operate in this arena, and certainly if they were going to be looking at buying in with the more premier equipment, has to look at the more premier pricing side of things, because you don't want to be looking at, you know, going through a Groupon with this and doing £99 for all areas for laser hair removal, because you won't make any money.
No. What are the premier? So just number one, do you need any CQC or any legislation now?
It depends on where you are. From October 2010, the Care Standards Act, as it was then, basically disappeared, and lasers and IPL therapies were specifically regulated in England and Wales. Up until that point, they're still regulated in Wales, but in England they're not. So it depends on whether or not you hit the criteria for CQC registration.
Yes.
And that's a little complicated, but does incorporate, obviously, other treatments as well. From our point of view, really, it's if you're a healthcare professional,
yeah,
and you carry out either one of, I think it's 15 regulated activities, but from our perspective, it's either some form of surgical treatment,
yeah,
or whether you're treating disease, disorder, or injury.
Yes.
It doesn't include lumps and bumps, cryotherapy, curettage, and cautery. It doesn't include lasers for cosmetic use.
Yeah.
That's the definition of what, you know, laser hair removal is, or any of the injectable treatments. So that's fillers or toxins. But if you're going to treat acne, rosacea, pigmented or vascular lesions, you do need to be registered. So, for instance, if you're a nurse and you were just treating, say, bikini lines and leg hair, and
there's
no underlying associated sort of disease, disorder or injury, then you wouldn't need to be CQC registered.
Yeah.
But you potentially would fall under a local government environmental health officer's regulation.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, actually, all of the criteria is pretty similar to the sort of criteria that you're going to need to hit for CQC registration anyway. So that looks at appropriate environment, local rules, protocols, having a laser protection advisor, servicing, audits, training, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So you can do it if you're just doing those things. What sort of facilities do you need?
Well, in essence, really, any room will do, pretty much, as long as you can ensure that the room is locked during the procedure, so people can't walk in while you're operating the machine, and there's certain signage to indicate that. And also that, say, for instance, if there's a window that has a suitable blind that will not allow laser to potentially inadvertently get out through a window if it's reflected off a surface.
Okay. So you could do it like that. Now, what are the state-of-the-art machines, Ron?
Well, I'd say probably the... There are three, I think, that are being sort of actively promoted by the three of the largest laser companies, laser manufacturers out there from a worldwide perspective. So Alma Lasers, which has a machine called the Soprano, which is an 810 diode laser. And in fact, it was a new concept that came out around about 3 years ago, where it's an in-motion laser system. So pretty much every system up until that point, whether it's an IPL or a laser system, looked at delivering the energy in a single stat shot. So you point and fire and then move on to the next area.
Yeah.
With this, what you're looking at doing is slowly raising the temperature of the hair follicle to around 50 degrees centigrade for a set period of time, while delivering epidermal cooling on the tip, which is a chill tip, to maintain the skin temperature at 25 degrees C, so you don't get obviously blistering and burning.
Yeah.
And, you know, the concept of all of these is selective photophthalmolysis. So basically you're trying to selectively heat the hair follicle and the bulb to cause some degree of damage during the anagen phase of hair growth.
So there's the Soprano is probably the state of the art, but, you know, certainly in the last couple of years. Are there any more contenders around there?
Absolutely. I mean, Luminous have brought out a new system, and again, Luminous have a long heritage and history with diode lasers, which I think people understand and have heard of lasers before. Lightshear is one brand that many clinics will have used. And the new version, which is the Lightshear Duet, again, takes a slightly different look at the technology and a twist on it. And they come out with a large spot-sized device with actually a very low fluence energy level of 12 joules, but that actually has a vacuum system that pulls the tissue up into the treatment head as it fires. So when you look at both the Soprano and the Light Shear, the developments have been to try and improve the tolerability of the product, of the treatments, rather than necessarily the efficacy, because the efficacy is fairly good with all of these treatments anyway. And so they both aimed at that, because when you look at clinical trials looking at IPL and laser devices, around 80% of people complain about the tolerability, the pain of treatment.
Right. So
clearly that's one area to look at improving. The other side is also looking at the being able to speed up treatment time as well.
Yes.
So having a larger spot size, or potentially being able to deliver the energy through an in-motion system, can reduce treatment time. And the other company that has, a very competitive device as well is Candetaceron, which has a Gentle Lace Pro. Now, that has been around in some form or other since 1998, but is actually an alexandrite laser, so that's a 755 wavelength.
Yeah.
And that's a technology that has a fluence up to 150 joules, so that's very different from the Light Shear Duet at 12 joules.
Yeah.
And has a range of spot sizes from 8 to 18 millimeters. But at the 18 millimeter spot size, you're actually only delivering 20 joules of energy, but it's got a very, very high repetition rate of 2 hertz, which means that you can treat legs in around 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So what they're claiming actually is that you've got one of the fastest laser systems in the marketplace.
Yes.
And when time is money, especially in this marketplace, being able to treat as many patients in a day as possible is obviously an attractive component as well.
Yeah.
Probably the other thing with the gentle laser as well at the moment is because of the laser wavelength, it can actually treat pigmented and vascular lesions as well.
Yeah.
And it's very effective at that. So it's most laser systems, tend to be designed just as what we call laser hair removal, devices and machines, and just be used just for that purpose.
Yeah.
So again, if you're just getting into the marketplace and trying to establish that, it's nice to be able to have a bit of flexibility in a machine.
Yeah.
To be able to treat other things. So you know, those are three devices ranging from around 35 to probably £60,000.
Yes. So, number one, how do you pay for it? Do you have to pay all up front, or can you pay in installments, or can you lease them?
All of these companies provide pretty much any option, to tell you the truth. So if you've got the cash, I probably wouldn't recommend you do it, just from a business point of view. But if you've got the cash, you can pay for it just up front. You'd probably be able to negotiate maybe a slightly bigger discount on that basis.
Yeah.
On the company. But the vast majority of people will put it through some form of lease.
Yes.
Over a period of 3 to 5 years. So over 3 years, you could be paying, say, roughly about $2,000 a month or less.
Yes.
Depending on the device. Normally, you're looking at interest rates of around about 7%, which is not too bad from a business point of view. So if you're looking at, say, $2,000 lease, and if you're employing, say, a therapist, then let's say you pay them £2,000 a month, maybe including bonuses, so $24,000 a year, which is actually quite a good salary. You'd be looking at trying to generate maybe around $10,000 in sales out of that device, so around about $6,000 profit. So that's just looking at a loose version of how you might look at the business model.
Yeah, but you've got to obviously do the marketing to get up to that level, haven't you?
Precisely. So, I mean, what I would recommend is, and certainly Martin, who's my business partner, has got this down to quite a fine art in terms of looking at a proper spreadsheet that looks at this from a business perspective.
Yeah.
It looks at the upfront costs.
Yeah.
It looks at the leasing costs. It looks at projected numbers of people that might come into the business through marketing. It comes to even point and profitability. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is all about money.
Yeah.
And what you don't want to do, and many people look at this and don't really look at it in that detailed way and kind of, you know, sort of put the finger in the wind and think, well, if other people are doing this and making it successful, I can too.
Yeah.
And focus all their time just trying to look at a system and then don't really think about how they're going to market it.
Yeah.
Or even look at their local competition or local area and do a little bit of groundwork for a start, which I think is important.
Okay. So, Martin, so if someone was thinking of getting into it, there's lots of different options. It might be worth talking to either Martin or yourself who have experience of lasers and how to make it work.
Absolutely. I mean, if anyone is interested, certainly just pop me, email me, ron@consultingroom.com, and we can get a spreadsheet out to them that'll help just a little bit from our point of view of the numbers, which is really important just for a start.
Can you send me one, please, Ron?
Yeah, by all means, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I was amazed, really, you know, that 40, 50% of some of these, some of the major clinics' income comes from hair removal, which I, you know, as a plastic surgeon, perhaps I'd overlooked.
I think it's just, you know, it is a mass marketplace. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, well, there are 15,000 plus beauty salons out there, many which will be doing some form of either, you know, waxing, which is the market, which if you look at it from a procedural perspective, some will be involved with normally IPL type devices. You've also got the at-home marketplace, and of course you'll see some of these systems now in Boots. Boots have got an IPL device.
Does it work? Does it work?
To a degree, I think really what you're looking at here are devices that have, I think, a lower degree of efficacy.
Yeah.
But some degree, they're probably more hair management devices.
Yeah.
And but this is the issue with all of this. It's looking at how, you know, the claims that are made, and no company can actually claim permanent hair removal.
No. Could you just enlarge on that a bit, Ron? So it's not a one treatment thing. So it's normally a course of how many treatments?
Yeah, normally most clinics will put together a package of six, possibly to eight. It depends on the business. And in fact, I noticed Skin recently had provided that option as well of either six or eight treatment courses.
Yeah. So from the patient's perspective, you go along with each treatment, say. So what's the most common areas? If you just run through, the most common areas to be treated are number one to number five.
Well, it'll probably be the legs, the commonest, and then bikini line underarms. It depends on your area, actually. In the Asian population, you can have a lot of people who come with facial hair.
Yes.
But be concerned about that, or hair on a lot of other areas of the body as well.
Yeah.
But it tends to be sort of legs, bikini line, underarms, in the Caucasian women.
Yeah. So I come in, I want my bikini line done, Ron, let's just say. So I come into your clinic, I have a treatment. How long is that going to, you know, or let's say a leg, how long is it going to take me? How long is the treatment going to take?
Well, again, it will depend on the device you've got. If you're having whole legs done, it can take anywhere from, say, 15 minutes with the latest systems to hour and a half or 2 hours with a slow IPL system.
Okay. How uncomfortable is that? If I've got the latest system, how uncomfortable is that for me for 15 minutes?
I think that the Soprano Light Shear and the Gentle Laze Pro, I think, are all much more comfortable systems. It tends to be a little bit more uncomfortable if you've got a darker skin type.
Yeah.
But I think all of them are an order of magnitude better than previous systems.
Yeah, so on a scale of 1 to 10, from, you know, 10's agony, 0's nothing?
Again, the problem is pain is individual.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did a survey recently, actually, just looking at this, comparing IPL to the Soprano. And with the IPL, you're probably in the order of sort of 7 to 8 in terms of pain experience.
Yeah.
Sort of 10 being worse, if you like, and 1 being no pain at all.
Yeah.
In the order of around 2 to 3 with Soprano. So I think most people with these newer systems, the pain is not so much of an issue. But you will tend to find anyway that people, especially if they've been used to having waxing, which is clearly painful anyway, you know, will find most of these treatments, you know, not much more painful or certainly less painful than waxing. That's with the older type of equipment anyway.
Right.
So it doesn't tend to be a massive hindrance in terms of people coming and having treatment. It's so painful that they cannot, you know, and won't come for the next treatment.
Okay.
But obviously, if you have an advantage from a marketing point of view in terms of saying you can claim that this is, you know, one of the most comfortable systems in the market, people will gravitate towards that because nobody wants.
So you've got the latest, most comfortable, you know, most efficient, quickest machine. With the best practitioners in the best
unit. And I think, you know, if you're going to look at premium pricing, you could have something that you could
make
different from your clinic down the road who's got a system that might only cost about £5,000 or £6,000. And obviously the business model then and the break-even point is very clearly different
than
a system where you're paying 35,000 plus.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. So last question, Ron. So I've had my legs treated. So I come in for one treatment. What will I expect? I've got moderately hairy legs. What will I expect after the first treatment? When are the treatments going to be? What's the time frame? What happens in that time?
Well, people will normally expect a degree after about a week or two. They'll notice that the hair is less dense.
Yeah.
In other words, you will have shed some of those hairs that were treated that were in the anagen phase, and taking into account it's only those hairs that are going to be treated in that treatment session, which is why you need six treatment sessions.
So it's only the androgen is the growth phase. So it's only the
absolutely.
Yeah. So hairs don't grow all the time. You know, a percentage growing, you're only going to knock off the growing hairs. So if you've got 40% of growing hairs, you reduce by 40% every time.
That's correct, and it does vary as well on different parts of the body.
Yeah.
So there are differences in terms of looking at the percentage of hairs that grow, and also for how long they're in the anagen phase as well.
Normally
people will experience some degree of hair improvement, reduction within after the first treatment, which will incentivize them to come and feel confident that this is something that's going to work for them.
And do you ask people to pay for a course, or do you ask them to, pay for individual treatments?
It depends on how the person wants to work. You always, always try and get people onto a course of treatment if you can, rather than pay as you go.
Yeah.
Because that way then they are committed to coming in and will get the best sort of possible response. If people come in on an ad hoc basis, they may not see the continued improvement and may not stick with the course of treatment.
Yeah.
To come in and then, say week one and then something happens and they don't get around to coming in for 3 months afterwards or something like that. It's nowhere near as good as having people coming normally on average every 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks. So six treatments over 6 weeks, 36 weeks, which is most of the year. And the most popular time for this in the calendar?
Well, funny enough, a lot of people will tend to look at coming in the summer.
Yeah, really?
When they start to... look at their hairy legs or whatever, but the best time actually to treat them is actually through the winter. Because of if somebody has tan skin, that's likely to react.
Yeah.
It might cause more problems. And so it's one of those paradoxical things. But I think if you can, we market laser hair removal all year round, and it is, to tell you the truth, fairly consistent.
Yeah.
But we just find it more difficult to treat people in the summer months because not everyone listens. To what you're saying, and certainly if people are going to go abroad, and suntan their skin, then that does delay the treatment.
Yeah, and I heard this great line that a friend of mine was telling me, I think she made it up actually, which was spring into summer hair free, which is hair as in the animal.
Okay.
I thought that was quite clever. I mean, I don't know. Reasonably clever. So, the idea being, obviously that, summer's coming and, get ready for, when you need to expose yourself. But brilliant. I mean, that's really helpful. I mean, if anyone is thinking of adding, learning more about hair removal systems, I think Ron and Martin Rowe, excellent people to contact. And can you just remind us how to contact you again, Mark?
Yes, just email me, ron@consultingroom.com or telephone 01788 577254.
And is Martin or yourself happy just to talk, without cost, or is there a cost involved for all this expertise?
No, absolutely. I mean, he'll come along. I mean, he's had experience with laser systems for working with different companies, and because we have our own clinic as well, we have sort of real life experience of in that marketplace and marketing. Looking at the finances behind it, so that gives an advantage as well. And sometimes he'll talk to people and actually say, because of your business, your setup, and where you're at, this is probably not a good
fit for you.
Point in time, yes. Whereas you'll tend to find some companies will just sell your system whether you need it or not, and get you excited about it in the market and how much money you can make, and before you know it, you've got a system, but little support and little idea about actually what's involved with that particular marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ron, thank you very much for joining me today. Really, appreciate it as ever. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you, and you too.
Are you doing anything nice for Christmas, Ron? Or?
just family, really. It'll be nice because my two of my kids are sort of away from home. It's nice to have them all come back and just, be back as a family again, really. So in fact, I look forward to Christmas more now than I have done for quite a long time. Sorry.
Have you got your wife a satisfactory present, Ron?
Of course. Absolutely, yes.
Brilliant.
I'll tell you what, though, just in case she listens to this before.
Yeah. Well, brilliant, Ron. Have a great Christmas and New Year. And thanks for all your support in the year.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, take care then.
Bye.